Let's open on the good bills.
Welcome, everyone, to the last formal day of the Senate Committee on Business, Transportation, and Economic Development. We have three bills up, and I think we're going to start from the bottom and go up. So I'm going to open a public hearing on 988. Richard.
Senate Bill 988 creates a task force on business, Oregon business regulations. We did have a letter from Pacific Power in support of the measure. And I have no revenue impact, but I did not yet receive a fiscal impact on this.
Okay. Let's see. So, first one I've got up is Fred Granum from the Department of Justice. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Fred Granum. I'm special counsel to the Attorney General for Business. As some of you know, I was recently appointed by the Attorney General to serve in a capacity in his senior staff to advise him on business issues that come before the Department of Justice. And the primary objective of my appointment is to conduct a project from the auspices of the Department of Justice to see what we might do to have the Department of Justice do its share to promote a better business climate within the state of Oregon. And I come before you today to report the Attorney General supports this bill and encourages that this bill be passed, and that it does a great deal to take the next steps to adopt the Oregon Business Plan, and will work in concert with the project that I'm undertaking. The role of enhancing the regulatory arena that's anticipated by this bill conforms directly to the role that the Attorney General plays and as in-house counsel to the different state agencies, and as well it fulfills the objective that I think everybody concerned about Oregon's future has in promoting a more positive business climate here. So with that, I'm here to express the Attorney General's support and encourage that this bill be passed, and welcome any questions that the members may have.
So, Fred, what kinds of things does the Attorney General have in mind that DOJ can do?
Well, most importantly, the Department of Justice, as in-house counsel for the different state agencies, is engaged, is at the table, so to speak, whenever regulatory matters are coming forward, whether it's permitting and enforcement actions. And with that, the role that I'm playing within the Department of Justice is to review how the Department of Justice engages in that regulatory arena, to come up with some internal processes of how the internal Department of Justice may improve its services, as well if there are processes that can be made to help make it more streamlined, more efficient, more methodical, and as a consequence, make government more efficient and make provide a better business climate for Oregon. That is the role that we're playing.
Thank you. Any other questions of Fred? Appreciate you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Senator, welcome.
Oh, it's always nice to be here with you guys. Thank you, Fred. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, I'm Senator Chris Telfer, currently representing District 27, also known as Sunny Central Oregon most of the time, other than maybe pole, pedal, paddle. Oh, I like that chuckle.
Just people in the valley choose to bring their weather with them.
Let me, Senate Bill 988, let me give you some background and a quick idea of where we're going with this. You know, jobs. Everything's about jobs, trying to get this state back on its feet. Helps the general fund. It helps a lot of different things. A couple years ago, the Oregon Business Plan Steering Committee started meeting and touring all over the state to come up with ways to improve the job environment in this state. I'd like to read, and they came out with this. This is a short synopsis of agenda and plan summary, not business as usual. This is the leadership summit. This is the Oregon business plan that was developed. And then I don't know if Pat Wrighton has reiterated this, but he wrote a letter in the beginning of this report that says, let me just quote from it. The Oregon business plan team toured all corners of our state this year, listening to business and community leaders learning what they need to grow their economies and adding their ideas to those of our working groups. The result is a set of 10 initiative recommendations to spark business and job growth. So there are 10 initiatives, and I've chosen to just pick one of them regarding the regulatory and permitting process in the state. It's just one of the 10 initiatives, and what the task force will do then is take these ideas from the plan, the Oregon business plan, flesh them out, and try to come up with specifics on addressing where we can improve upon the regulatory environment and help businesses grow, try to get some of the stranglehold off them, try to get some of the duplication away, as well as the permitting process. In particular, the bill asks them to look at the regulatory streamlining, establishing one-stop efficient permitting processes, standards for administrative rulemaking. In any case, there's an 11-member task force that we're asking to be put together, four members being appointed by the governor, some members being appointed by leadership in the four or in the two legislative bodies. What we're trying to do is come up with some specifics. There should be no fiscal. I don't know why we're seeing a fiscal, because there is no reimbursement. It's all coming out of our pockets. We'd like to come back to the legislature in February with some specific legislative things that we can do to help the regulatory environment and the permitting processes in the state. This is the one time, I think, we're taking something that usually would be put on a shelf to collect dust, and we're actually going to actually do something with it and come up with some specifics, and then ultimately some legislation in February that can really, I think, help our economic environment in this state. So I'm looking to you for more than just a polite hearing, an informational hearing. I really would like to see this bill go to the floor for passage, so that it gives some credibility to this group. Frankly, if the bill doesn't get more than a hearing, I'm going to move forward with it. I've got some, as you can see in the letter from Pat, we've got some support to go forward with this. But it would be very helpful, I think, to have the blessing of the legislature and give that task force some credibility in moving forward.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yes.
Senator Stark?
Question to the chair. The bill is posted for public hearing only. We're under 1 hour. Is it the intent of the chair to post for an hour for a work session on this bill?
It would take an approval from the Senate President to do that, as I understand it, under our rules.
And such approval being requested?
I haven't.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Jeremy Rogers and Eric Blackledge.
Can we go first? Chairman Byron, members of the committee, my name is Eric Blackledge, owner of Blackledge Furniture in Corvallis. I've been involved in state and federal regulatory issues for more than 40 years, served as the chair of the Oregon Regulatory of a number of regulatory streamlining initiatives, including the Tax and Regulatory Subcommittee of the Emerging Business Initiative. I chaired for many years the Small Business Council in the state of Oregon, and have been also very involved through the Oregon Business Plan in regulatory streamlining issues, and have co-chaired that committee for a number of years. I've also served and participated in the Governor's Advisory Committee on Performance and Accountability, Governor Kulongowski, and have also served in many particular specific state and federal regulatory agency advisory committees. We've made significant progress in the last few years in improving the user-friendliness of the regulatory process in the state of Oregon, but much still needs to be done. Prior advisory committees have been a real key to this process. They've made it work along with the Department of Regulatory Streamlining and DCBS. But more can and still needs to be done. Senator Toeffler's bill is an ideal solution to that problem. It would provide an ongoing way to identify the next improvements that would be possible in that process.
I've also attached to my written testimony a copy of the federal regulatory initiative, which I've been suggesting to Congress and the administration this year, which I think also has a state component that this task force could look at in helping the legislature identify ways to more effectively regulate issues by providing guidance from a state agency to provide neutral and bipartisan input in the formation of regulations. Because regulations really result from legislation, and good legislation is really the key to having a regulatory process that helps attract new business investment to Oregon. So I would urge you to pass out Senate Bill 99 with a two-pass recommendation, though it would appear to me that based on procedural issues, that's not going to be a choice today. But I think it is still a bill that would be very beneficial to the state and a process which will help bring some things to the next legislative session that will allow you to implement some changes in the regulatory process. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Jerry, questions?
Thank you very much.
Jeremy.
Thanks. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Jeremy Rogers. I am the work with the Oregon Business Council, and I'm the project manager for the Oregon Business Plan. It's long been a goal of the Oregon Business Plan to create and maintain an efficient, simple, and streamlining permitting system that makes it easy to start and expand businesses in Oregon while still protecting our public regulatory goals. Uniform and efficient permitting enables businesses to plan critical capital expenditures with great certainty and to carry out projects with less chance of costly delay. And as you all know, in business, time is money, and more efficient permitting can have the same effect as increased access to capital because oftentimes capital needs of a business or project are dictated by the timeline that it takes to get that up and running and the permits that are required for it. And I know that's another issue that this committee has been thinking about, and I think that one kind of way to get at that is to improve the efficiency of the permitting process. And let me give you an example of that. I was speaking with a project developer for a renewable energy project in Oregon. Companies based in the Mountain West, they have an office in Portland, and they're doing a project in rural Oregon. And I asked, it's the first project of its kind that they've done in Oregon, and I asked the developer, have you done this in other places? And he said, yes, we've done several of these in Texas and some other states. And I asked, well, what's the key differences between the other states and in Oregon, and what made you decide to do this here? He said, well, the permitting process takes about twice as long in Oregon for this project, but the Betsy is very attractive and made it worth doing here. Right now, given both the capital constraints in the private markets, but also in the money that the state government is putting towards economic development and the incentive programs that we have, like Betsy, as we retract from that, one way to kind of stay competitive is to improve the permitting processes. And I said, if we didn't have the Betsy, would you be here, given the permitting timeline? I said, absolutely not.
Business, Jeremy?
What's that?
What kind of business?
It's a renewable energy project that's in Southern Oregon. So I don't want to get too specific. But renewable energy is one example of that. But I think that, as Eric mentioned, there's been a lot of efforts that have been that have taken place in the state to improve the permitting process. It's been a while since we've done that. We've testified in front of this committee before, and you've asked very specific questions about specifically what can we do to improve that. And We mentioned that we've been hearing a lot about concerns, but some of them are different for different regions, some of them are similar, and I think that a task force like this is an appropriate approach at this point, tease that stuff out in the interim and be able to come back next session with some very specific things that you can do. But I also like to commend the committee for things that you have done this session. Senate Bill 766 came through this committee. It improves permitting processes on industrial lands. House Bill 2700 has been heard in this committee, improves permitting process on linear projects. Senate Bill 795 dealt with transportation planning rule regulations, and this committee's dealt with that. So I certainly appreciate the work that's been done, but I think a task force in the interim would be a great way to talk about next steps. So I encourage you to pass the bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions with Jeremy? Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Both of you. That's all I have signed up for this. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify? Seeing none, I do not have, as I mentioned, the ability to schedule this for a work session today, but I will talk with the Senate President about this. I think it is a good idea. I wish we had gotten it sooner. Could have done something with it. But
such is life in the process. We'll find a way to get it done. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 988. And here we will go back up to the top of the agenda. Thank you, Richard. And we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 2370. Richard.
House Bill 2370 requires notice be given to the Department of Transportation when any real property is for sale near railways. We heard this bill on May 16th, and there is no revenue and minimal fiscal impact on this.
Okay. I wonder if someone from ODOT, Robin, or okay.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, committee members. For the record, I'm Jerry Bohart with the Oregon Department of Transportation.
So what's the benefit of this bill from ODOT's perspective?
Very good question. I think one of the key parts is the communication and being notified, working through the notification and getting some process in place when a parcel property that may become available that could extend and expand our rail system, working with whether it's short lines or class one railroads. I think it will even become more important. I think many of you are aware that we recently finished the rail study, which identified some of the various needs around our infrastructure for rail, and we're in the process of starting the rail plan, which will really identify kind of the future of our rail system. So these will link very well together. So the agency supports this bill. I believe with the rulemaking, we'll be able to make sure it's a very simplified process and one that works for everybody.
Okay. Any questions, Chair?
Two things.
Senator Atkins.
Is it the department's intent to slow down the private purchase of parcels?
Chair Beyer, Senator Atkins, definitely not.
Quick comment, just for the record. In the community of Grants Pass, there used to be a rail line that had some land adjacent to it that was really no longer valuable. In fact, the rail line had long since no longer been in use. And so, being a not very desirable piece of property, it was sold to the Gospel Rescue Mission for an absolute sweetheart price. And then they went on a fundraising episode to raise as much money as they could to build a new facility and dormitory for men and for families, actually women and children who found themselves without a home. But through that process, we, the community, spent 2 years fighting with various agencies to get the approval to do that. And so it's that experience that makes me a little hesitant about the bill, if not saying that that would happen again, but you know, that's been my experience. I'm not saying that was specifically ODOT in that instance. I think ODOT was not even focused on railways at that time in that kind of manner, but it makes me nervous if we're going to get in the position of putting state government having essentially the power to delay, which is what government does very effectively, over a private transaction. I just get a little nervous.
Senator Beyer, Vice Chair Atkinson, the bill doesn't put that limitation on it. It's just a communication, a notification, so that purchasing process would continue regardless of the notification. So,
thank you.
I would also add a comment. I think this is a very small kind of thing that's there, but I think we've been very short-sighted in a few years about the advantages of rail, and both for passenger, but more importantly, I think for freight rail. I think we need to look more to that. We need to find ways to do that and expedite that. I'm not sure this will get us there, but at least provides the opportunity where we'll have ODOT at least looking before, and hopefully when they complete the new railway plans, we'll get to that point, because that's we're just not going to be able to continue to build our way out of it just with roads, and the more traffic we can get onto rail and use the combined multimodal, the better off we'll be in a number of different ways. So I support this for that. Is there any other questions that members have?
Seeing none. Thank you very
Thank
much,
you.
Chair.
I don't know, is there anybody else who has a comment on this who would like to offer it? Seeing none. We are in work session, and the chair would move House Bill 2370 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? Senator Gerard is opposed. Anybody else opposed? House Bill 2370 is passed to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Gerard in opposition. I will carry. Okay, we're closed on that. We will now open a public hearing on House Bill 2840. Richard.
House Bill 2840 incorporates forest product industries into the Green Growth Initiative. This is obviously the first time we've heard it, and there's no revenue impact and minimal fiscal impact on this measure.
Okay. Three people signed up, Bill Cluding and Mike Sullivan. Come on down.
Do you want me to note this is identical? That's 192.
Did we pass this already?
We passed the Senate.
Gentlemen, I think this is a mirror bill of one that we passed earlier that is over in Ways and Means.
Yes, sir. For the record, Bill Cluding, Carpenters Industrial Council. If I may back up and explain, in 2009, House Bill 3300 was passed, and it was a green jobs bill. And in that, they talked about timber and timber jobs. I got to thinking about this the last couple of years, and when you look back at what happened to our forest industry, we've lost over 300 mills in the last 20-some years. No industry in this state has lost 50-some thousand workers, mill workers, and that's us. And this is Oregon's problem today. Just an example of what goes on. This summer over in Bend, I got a phone call from ex-Representative Burley. He said, Bill, I got a problem over here. We got $13 million federal stimulus money for forest restoration work, and we're not getting one single job. So I contacted the Bend newspaper, and I got some hands-on on this. And what was going on, there was four outside of the state contractors were bidding on these jobs and with foreign workers. And when I checked on the foreign worker staffs, the U.S. Department of Labor had issued foreign worker visa permits for these people. And ironically, I had spoke to the Region 6 director earlier before these bids started going out, and I told her, I said, ma'am, you got all the right in the world to use stewardship contracting, which means you don't have to take the low ball bid. You can take the bid of your local contractors right here that hire the local labor and keep the money right here. That was ignored. We lost all $13 million worth of those jobs. These outside contractors are supposed to contact the unemployment department. I call them the unemployment department 10 days in advance and let them know they can't find help. They're supposed to run ads in the local newspapers. These groups didn't either. They didn't contact the unemployment department, and one person run an ad in a paper in Colorado. Now, this is a long way of getting around this. These are green jobs, our forest jobs. Again, we did not get one job in Central Oregon. We could have had 100 and some people working in Central Oregon right now today, but we did not get it. I looked at that House Bill 3300, and I broke it down, and I got advice to start the bill in the House and the Senate. Now, you folks kindly enough passed Senate Bill 192, sponsored by Senator Nelson, and it went through the House, passed the House, but it got referred to Ways and Means. House Bill 2840 is exactly the same bill, and again, my process on this is drawing attention to what's happened to our industry. And if you read down through this Senate bill, or House Bill 2840, green jobs means a job that provides a service or product, increases energy efficiency, that doesn't have much to do with forestry, but you move on down, cleans up and restores the natural environment, and that's what we do. On line 18 on 2840, I took the word timber out and put in forest products. And then on the second page, line 29, I actually listed the jobs that we felt that was in forest products industry. And I admit I did not put lumber broker in there. But again, businesses that grow, manage, harvest, transport, and process forest, wood, and paper products. Again, Chair, Committee, we've lost 50,000 jobs. And that's not counting the loggers. This is just mill jobs. And I'll let Mike talk to you a little bit about the paper mill problem. And thank you.
Mike?
Mike Sullivan, political director for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers. And just briefly, because, you know, there's deja vu all over again, I just came back from the AWPPW Council, and they had one delegate come from the Blue Heron plant. And as he talked, it was more gut-wrenching than I thought, because he lost $200,000 in wages, benefits, accrued vacation. A lot of these people bought the mill in 2007, wounded, first of all, by the river keepers who constantly sued Blue Heron, but it's also the presidential trade agreements that we enter into presently, and I get this from Vice President Greg Pellison of the association. China says that it'll pay 10% above whatever raw paper stock that any mill in Canada and the United States can get. So our companies cannot compete. We're getting whipsawed to death between environmental concerns and inadequate trade agreements. And I'll end it there. We definitely need to protect the workers that work in the state. And I do say protect because they are taxpayers and they pay taxes to support the government that we all want. Thank you. I'll answer any questions.
I'm very sympathetic. I mean, the wood products industry put me through college, and I come from one of those areas that spent a lot of time, and fortunately we still have one of Mike's paper mills. I don't know for how long, but it's still there now. We passed this one out earlier, but I guess I want to ask just generally, what do you think you get out of this? At the end of the day, is this a study? Because it looks like a study, and I'm not real sure what the end goal of it will be.
Sir, if I may, and to your point about mills, I just lost another 200 members last week. And again, I don't think you can drive within 5 miles of your house anywhere and not go past an old mill site. But I picked up the fiscal report, and if I may read this, a little bit of it. The Department Committee of College and Workforce Development indicates the Workforce Investment Board has a green jobs growth initiative that has included some forest products in industries. However, Senate Bill 192 and also 2840 requires a more in-depth analysis than previously been conducted. And I just assumed that when I started this that 3,300 covered all them jobs, and I find now that it doesn't. But, sir, to your point, again, it's to bring the attention to everybody what's going wrong with our forest industry.
So is it your hope more focusing on the jobs we are losing and just putting a spotlight on that? Or is it more planning for the skills? I mean, I'm kind of torn a little bit. I understand the paper piece that Mike's talking about. I've heard many times over from the pulp paper that China can take the raw materials, the recycled paper, pay more for it, take it to China, process it, and put it on the Long Beach docks for about two-thirds of the cost as we can process it internally. I'm trying to put that together with what will we get out of the study in terms of, is it maybe some kind of trade policies or, normally we're looking at this for training, but sort of training alone for jobs that are disappearing. I mean, I have strong feelings about that, but I'm not sure that gets us anywhere. But I'm hoping you're suggesting that maybe we'll get something else out of it.
Well, sir, again, I would like to point out that if I was a private owner, I would be getting top dollar from my log, too. I think where this state made a mistake was not helping these small mill owners out. Instead of our log being exported overseas, right now China and Japan are paying top dollar. If you go by Coos Bay or Longview, again, if I was a private owner, I would be looking at the top dollar. But I think if the state would have stepped in and assisted these smaller mills to compete with that top dollar price and keep their mills running, because the mill workers is the ones that pays the taxes. But if anything, what this does, if we can get quicker retraining for our people that lose their jobs, that's what I'm after.
Yeah, Bill, I'm seeing more log trucks going up I-5 every day when I drive up and back than I've seen in 10 years. Unfortunately, I know where they're going. They're going to Longview, and they're going overseas.
That's right.
As round logs, not as finished timber.
And if I may, sir, they're buying everything now. They don't care anymore about that top quality choice cut out of that log. And they're even buying hemlock. So I don't know where the end will be. But if we can bring more attention to our plight, I appreciate it.
And, Chairman, I'd like to add that I'd like to have a study to end the studies. This was not our intent. Our intent was to clarify the definition of what timber jobs mean, because a pulp and paper job, somebody who's just moved here to Oregon would not tie it to timber.
Hmm. Senator Durant?
I kind of read the bill a little differently, and the plight for timber has always been that it's not environmentally friendly. And I think now with the new studies out showing that forest fires are the biggest contributor to greenhouse gases, that it actually has changed it so that timber now is considered a green job. And I think that's where we want the emphasis to go, that look, this is a green job. And so, that's one of the ways I look at the bill.
Well, I mean, is there other questions of these? I don't want you to leave, but I want to get Greg White up here, and he's the workforce council, and kind of get his perspective so we know what we're talking about. Greg? If I may ask you to come up. So you help us put this in perspective of what's, because you're with the workforce council, and I know this money, it's not a lot, $25,000, $35,000 to do a study, but how does it fit in? You've heard these two guys, and you guys are usually focused on training.
Yes. Senator Beyer, Chair Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Greg White. I am the executive staff to the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, and all three of us have been following both of these bills around this building. The Oregon Workforce Investment Board nor the Department of Community College and Workforce Development have a position on this bill. We're not against it. We're not for it. We're neutral. We do see this as an addendum to the Green Jobs Growth Plan that was submitted to the legislature back in October. It would go into more depth if this were to pass and we were told to carry it out. We would go into more depth in the forest products industry. It was not prioritized in the first bill because according to the definition there that is in the legislation and in the bill here, reproduced in the bill, it was not there weren't enough jobs to make it a higher priority, but this would definitely go into more depth in occupations in the forest products industry and what is green jobs among them.
So this is essentially your focus is on projecting demand for jobs and likely supply and then training necessary and then focusing on the training?
Senator Beyer, yes, that's correct. We, as part of the Green Jobs Growth Plan, we commissioned a study by Eco Northwest that prioritized our eight sectors, we called them, that have in the state's economy that have green jobs. That was the exact idea, was to project how many jobs there, say how many jobs there are, project what their what jobs will be in the future, what the supply is. Tried to focus on family wage jobs, as you might imagine, but that's exactly what that did. And the $25,000 or $30,000 that you mentioned that was did not appear in the fiscal, by the way, because it's federal funds. It's not free. Would be to commission a similar study by an economics firm. We would bid that out to an economics firm, and so that's that is the that would be what the result would be.
You're going to have to help me connect the dots here a little bit. What I hear Bill and Mike saying is our problem is not a lack of supply of trained people to do these jobs. It's a diminishing demand, diminishing jobs that one receives. So how would the study deal with that, which is normally focused on training?
Senator Beyer, it would just be a study that would lay out for policymakers what the choices might be. I do want to add one more piece that was that Mr. Kluding did not refer to in the fiscal. There was a supplemental fiscal recently sent to LFO, and I know that the House committee had that, so I'm sure it's available to you guys. But these funds come from, to us from the federal government, and they, when the Workforce Investment Act funds come from the Department of Labor to the state's allowed to keep a certain percentage to do required and allowable activities, kind of administrative type activities, which are required, and the allowable activities, which we've been using for governors and legislators' priorities, like the National Career Readiness Certificate development and rollout implementation, career pathways in the community college, manufacturing study, our healthcare pipeline study work. I can't name them all off the top of my head, but our strategic planning work for the state's workforce system, these funds in the federal government have been seriously cut, and the threat is that when the new federal budget passes, it comes in the 2012 budget, that these will be zeroed out completely. And at that point, we do not know how we'll be able to carry out the required activities, much less the allowable activities. So I do want the committee to be aware of that. Yes, there is a, quote, minimal fiscal from LFO on this, but these are federal funds that basically some of those get passed down to the field, which could result in training for folks. But they are also for these activities that we produce that tend to push and build the system that to create a competitive workforce for Oregon business.
Percent we would be doing if shows should we do this study and something else wouldn't get done.
That's correct. It's a small amount of money comparatively, but it is money, and there is no money in the bill for training. That would still be from the other federal funds that we get, which, by the way, are also so dwindling.
Money to study the problem, but no money to do anything about it.
That's correct.
Typical Fed. Senator Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to, add, I can't remember exactly what it was that you said, but you said something that sparked a thought in my mind, my personal experience, and it's been a few years now. I got out of the business, out of the forest products manufacturing side of the business in 2005 is when we sold our operations. But in the several preceding years, labor issues were really significant. It was very difficult for us to find shovel operators, very difficult for us to find millwrights. The average age of our shovel operators and millwrights, which are more skilled positions, was really increasing, gone were the days at that point when we could just put an ad in the paper, and we were still doing ads in papers then, put an ad in the paper for a millwright or shovel operator and get 20 applications. I mean, that just didn't happen. Or if we did get 20 applications, it was 20 applications from people that had zero experience or very little experience. So it appeared to me that the industry, because of supply issues, had been kind of in a downward spiral. Workers didn't see it as having, didn't perceive that they would have a future in the industry, so didn't really perceive career pathways in the industry. And so, and that further exacerbates the problem. And so, obviously there are supply issues that we have to, timber supply issues that we have to deal with, particularly on our public lands and particularly our federal lands. But this workforce issue is very significant for people operating, or at least it was then. I don't know with the downturn in the economy. I'm not as intimately involved anymore. I don't run an operation anymore. So I don't know, what that's done for labor supply. But it was a very significant issue and one of the most significant issues that we dealt with when I was still in that business. So just wanted to throw in those 2 cents.
Anybody else?
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to chime in, too, that the governor said that he wanted the forest industries not to be a sunset industry, to be a sunrise industry. And I can remember the day when the timber industries was the number one industry in the state. And I would like to see those days return. It's just my district has been decimated by that. The downturn in the timber industry. So I think anything that we can do to help them, I think, is our legislative duty.
I would be very pleased to see a study that would address the problem of how do we keep the jobs here rather than seeing them go overseas. But that would be a different study, strategic study, than a typical workforce skills study. And I'm not sure if we get there with this kind of bill, does it? Would you read it that way, since you're likely to be the person who
purchase
the study, probably?
I do agree with you. I think it would be of extreme interest to understand the forest products industry in depth in relation to green jobs. I do believe that would be of interest. Believe me, I also am very sympathetic with the plight of the forest products industry in Oregon. It put me through college as well. I remember as Senator Girard said, how it used to be, and maybe we can get there again, according to the governor. And that would be great. And it would be of interest to see this the study come out. However, I'm just not sure, in my own mind, that it meets the objectives that as you have said, that it is just a study. I guess I'll stop there.
Am I hearing you say that the money that would fund this is federal money and you may not be able to do the kind of study that we're talking about with that funding?
Senator Beyer, yes, that is possible. As I said, it's the cut is coming or possibly coming to the entirety of that fund for the department. At the moment, it is only the way it's been interpreted in the continuing resolution that was passed for the 2011 budget in Congress, just to apply to this first quarter of funding. But it could be the entire amount, in which case I don't know what we would do. Certainly, if the legislature tells us to do a study and we have the funding available to do it, we will do it. And as I said, it would certainly be of interest. However, I'm not sure we're going to have it.
Okay. I don't know what to do with that, but okay. In general, if the legislature tells a department to do something, they usually do it.
Absolutely. But absolutely, Senator Byron. Thank you. But
welcome to Oregon.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Committee, we're in work session. We have a bill in front of us that we've passed before in a similar style. We're not in work session. We're now in closed public hearing, and we're now in work session. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2840 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Girard has moved House Bill 2840 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation once again. Discussion on the motion.
It was a good bill before, still a good bill.
Anybody else want to opine? Is there anybody who wishes to oppose this bill? Seeing none, House Bill 2840 is passed to the Senate floor with a new pass recommendation, and it's between Senator Girard and Senator Edwards. Who would like to carry? Senator Rod Rothkare, you're closed on 2840, and colleagues, unless there's something else to come before us, we are done.
For today.
We're done.